they do that, I want to let you know that this week, while Thanksgiving is coming and all the wonderful things associated with that, Christmas is also coming, and so, which also means Christmas services at Cross Point. And so we will be having 7 this year, Christmas services. Yeah, woo! And it's one of the most fun times of the year for us as a leadership. We have a great time doing it, and we want to make sure we continue to have as much space as needed to accommodate you and to accommodate all the people that you want to invite along with you. And they really is one of the highlights of our year is our Christmas services. And so, just to kind of give you a heads up for the planners of you out there, the Christmas services start on Tuesday, December 21st. There's one at 7. There's one on Wednesday at 7, one at Thursday at 7, and on Friday there are 1, 3, 5, and 7. And so, got 7 different times, so we're trying to make it as easy as possible for you to get to one of those, even if you travel out of town, and so that we have some earlier in the week that you can get to. But tickets for our Christmas services start getting distributed on December 5th. So just giving you a heads up to that. We don't charge for tickets. It's completely free. We just distribute tickets so that we can make sure that we don't end up with, 200 extra people than we have seats in a particular service and try to spread out the crowds as best that we possibly can. And so those tickets will start getting distributed on December 5th. But wanted to make sure just to give you a heads up for you guys to go ahead and start planning now. If you have a Bible this morning, I invite you to turn to the book of 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy is a tiny little book near the back of the New Testament. If you don't have a Bible, we'll put the words on the screen behind me, and you can follow along that way. 2 Timothy has always been one of my favorite books in the Scriptures, because what you find is you find the author, Paul, who ended up writing nearly half the New Testament. You find Paul at the very end of his life. And he's in a dungeon, and he's in chains, and he's writing what would end up being his last known letter to a young man named Timothy that he had been mentoring through the years. And Paul knows that he's near the end of his journey. And so in this particular letter, he's basically sharing with Timothy the last few things that he wants to share with him. And after reflecting on his life and his journey with Jesus, Paul wants to make sure he emphasizes a few things. Timothy, make sure that you hold on to these few ideas. And so I've always enjoyed going back and reading through 2 Timothy from time to time, because what you do is you get the essence of someone's kind of last words that they want to pass on, but you also get to hear the heart of a man who's been through more than any of us can likely ever imagine. This up and down roller coaster of a journey where Paul had been rich and he had been poor, and he had been highly acclaimed, but he had also spent much time being persecuted and tortured. Paul, at parts of his life, was very popular, but he also went through seasons when he was very hated. Paul was very arrogant at times and had also been greatly humbled. He had been forcefully against Jesus and even to the point of putting many of his followers to death. And then he went on to become one of the most loyal followers of Jesus, who forever impacted the world still today. And so I was reading through this particular letter a couple weeks ago, knowing that we find ourselves right now kind of in between teaching series. We just came off the 23 series and walking through Psalm 23, and we're going to enter into a Christmas teaching series here soon. And so we find ourselves kind of in between, and I came across something that Paul wrote to Timothy as one of these, hey, you know what, if you're going to remember anything, if you want to live life well, here's one of those things you need to hold on to. And as I sat there reading it, it just seemed timely for us, and it seemed worth exploring for a few moments this morning what Paul wrote to Timothy in chapter 2, verse 23. He says this. He says, don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments, because you know they produce quarrels. Now, another translator, he puts it this way. He says, refuse to get involved in inane discussions. They always end up in fights. Another translator looks at the same verse that Paul wrote, the same words, and he translates it this way into English. Avoid silly and unprofitable disputes, because you know they produce fights. And so here's Paul, nearing the end of his life, and he's got a few things he wants to make sure he's passing on to Timothy from all he's learned, from all his experience. And he says, okay, stay clear of arguments that go round and round in circles and only serve to get everyone upset. There's no point in even starting those kinds of conversations. But the reality is, the opportunity to start those kinds of conversations or to step into those conversations happen pretty much every day. For many of you, it'll happen this week. You're going to gather with people for Thanksgiving. And some people that you maybe only see a couple times a year, maybe once a year, are going to all be gathered together, and you're already bracing for the debates that are going to come up. Maybe the topic that always seems to come up around the living room or around the dining room table, maybe it's politics. And there's this inevitably somehow the conversation turns to where political lines get drawn and snide remarks get tossed back and forth on different sides of the aisle. Maybe there's a particular ethical issue that you're extremely passionate about, and you know exactly what buttons to push in other people, and they know exactly what buttons to push in you. And every time you get together, sooner or later, it turns to that. Maybe it's a debate about religion or your faith, and it always seems to make it back around to that. And maybe you feel like people are constantly kind of putting you on your heels, or they're trying to kind of back you in a corner or pick a fight with you on a certain theological issue. Or maybe it's an unresolved issue that happened in the past. Maybe it happened there with the people in the room, and everyone's got their own perspective on whose fault it is and who did what and who hurt who the worst. And maybe the debate inevitably happens surrounding different parenting styles. You're in a house with all these kids running around, and everyone parents differently, and so it starts to create tension, it starts to create stress, and this debate and snide remarks about how this one parents versus this one parents. Or maybe it's something seemingly insignificant, like whose team is better or whose team they think is going to win and beat the other one down, or whether you should bake or fry the turkey this year. You know, there's these, sometimes these discussions and debates seem silly, but they just go round and round and round, and you keep coming back to them, it seems like, all the time. And it doesn't really matter how insignificant or significant the debates are. Some of you know that there are these certain topics that always seem to come up. They never get resolved, and you can't seem to get away from them whenever you gather together. But for others of you, those arguments rarely, if ever, happen during the holiday gatherings. You know, I talk about that, and you're like, that never marks any of our, you know, holidays. Everyone's smiling and loving and just hugs all around all the time, and everybody gets along. But those debates for you seem like more of a daily reality with your strong-willed child or with your teenager. Maybe you find yourself in circular arguments with them that just go round and round. Or maybe it's not with them, maybe it's with your spouse, where you both keep walking on eggshells all the time, waiting for one of you to explode. Or maybe for you, those constant foolish arguments don't happen at home nearly as much as they do in your work environment, where there's this constant sense of walking into a war zone every day because it's the same old issues day after day, to the point where you dread even coming into the office because you know the same debate is just going to constantly be there. Now, before we dive into this much further, you need to make sure you hear something. I'm not saying you should not have strong opinions about issues, or that you should not be passionate about certain topics that are important to you. I'm not saying that in the least. In fact, one of the things I tell our staff team here at church very often is, if you have an opinion, I expect you to share it, that what we do here is far too important for you to have a perspective and not share it. But there's a right way to do it, to express your opinion, and there's a wrong way to do it. Which basically, when you kind of boil it all down, it comes down to there's an arrogant way to go about sharing your viewpoint, and there's a way to do it that's marked with humility. And while the line between those can be thin at times, it becomes very obvious when it's crossed. And we all have to become aware of the difference. And so rest assured, I'm all for healthy debate. I'm all for healthy discussion and conversations about all sorts of different topics and entering into those. But when you find yourself constantly revisiting certain divisive arguments with people that go round and round and never move anything forward and only end up causing division and only destroy relationships, cause tension in relationships, then I think we have to pause. And we have to be willing to ask some challenging yet important questions. And so I thought this morning that a good way to spend our time together is to share with you some of these questions that I think are worth asking. that as we found ourselves in this week that's not connected with any particular teaching series, I thought it would be well worth our time to spend a few moments exploring some very practical tools and ideas that will hopefully help us to love people better. Especially since during the holidays, it's supposed to always be about relaxation and peace and joy and harmony, and yet for many of us, it ends up being very stressful, very tense. And for some of you, it really comes down to it's about relationships, and it's about the tension in those relationships. And sometimes it's because of these debates and these arguments that seem to come up. And yet, at the very core of walking with God, Jesus says that we need to learn to love people well. And so we have to continue to explore very practical ways on how do we actually do that. And so, first question that I think is worth each of us pausing and asking is this. And you might, if you have a pen, maybe take some time, write it down. I think they'll be helpful. Number one, am I wanting to be right, or do I want to be seen as right? Am I wanting to be right, or do I want to be seen as right? In the scriptures, another writer, James, asked, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You see, we tend to think that fights and quarrels are about particular topics, about particular issues. But Jesus says the source of those, they come from within each of us. That there's something within each of us, these desires within each of us, that really are the root of those types of quarrels. And many times what causes us to continue to argue and debate foolishly about certain things isn't a desire to be right. It's a desire to be seen as right. Now, that may seem subtle, but there's a big difference between those. And so what some of us have done is we've learned to debate really well. There's certain topics, whether it's political or financial or theological or ethical or relational, and some of you, you're loaded for bear. You're ready to go at the drop of a hat. It doesn't matter if it's face-to-face. It doesn't matter if it's on a blog. It doesn't matter if it's on Facebook. You know what? You've already made up your mind about something. And something in you likes provoking the argument because you've got your reasons and you've got your defenses all lined up to prove that you're right. But the problem is that you're not as concerned with actually being right as you're concerned with winning the argument or being perceived as right. And so you can bully someone with your apparent intellectual superiority and you know how to quickly put them in their place and make sure you're seen as right. However, if your desire is to be right, much more than being perceived as right, then it's much easier to carry with you an attitude of humility because you can approach any topic with a sincere willingness to learn, to listen, to understand. Because what you're concerned about is what is right. Not being seen is right. I mean, think about it for a moment. When was the last time, if you're a person who likes to debate political things, and coming off the political season that we're in, I mean, we've seen that all over the place. But when was the last time, if that's you, that you sat down with an informed person who believed completely differently on a political issue than you did and asked something like, could you help me understand your perspective better on this issue? This particular issue is important to me, and I really want to understand the way you see it. And then, and this is key, all you do is listen. You're not trying to just set them up so that you can blast them with your, you know, superior arguments. You know, not trying to hammer them into the ground. You're not trying to start or win an argument. All you want to do is listen and learn and try to understand. And you leave it at that. When was the last time, if ever, if that's something you're into, that you did that? I mean, that for that matter, if you're a parent, when was the last time you did that with your kid or with your teenager? I think as parents, it's easy to fall into this kind of pattern. And I know I can. I know I struggle with this, where there's times when you find yourself exhausted. You find yourself just too busy. And your child, your teenager, they try to share their perspective, but you really don't want to consider it because you've already made up your mind and you've moved on to something else. And so it can easily become, how can I make sure that I'm seen as right for no other reason than I'm the parent and I say so, you know? I'm the parent, and I've already said it. I don't want to hear anymore. But we don't take time to explain ourselves or the reasoning or the wisdom behind it. We don't take the time to listen to them and to their perspective. And so we find ourselves, you know, many times with our kids constantly arguing over the stupidest things over and over again. And what it does is it turns into a battle of wills much more than it ever actually deals with the topic or kind of really understanding or evaluating the issue at hand. But students, the same thing goes for you. I mean, when was the last time you found yourself at odds with your parents over this repeating issue and you desperately keep trying to convince them that you're right? When was the last time that you went to your mom or dad and said, you know what, I'll honor what you say, but can you help me understand the reasons behind what you're telling me to do? And rather than assuming your parents don't understand, and rather than assuming your parents are just out of the loop and don't get it, starting with the assumption that they just might have some wisdom that you can learn from, that they just might have some life experience and see things from a different perspective than you do, that might be worth listening to and learning from. I mean, the same thing holds true with your spouse or your coworker or with your boss. Same thing holds true with a mom that disciplines their kids differently than you do, or with that friend or family member who's still hurt about something and sees the situation completely differently than you do. What if you pause long enough to ask, am I wanting to be right? Am I wanting to learn and actually understand? Or am I simply wanting to be seen as right? Do I really just want to win? The book of Proverbs, it says this: it's a mark of good character to avert quarrels, but fools love to pick fights. Now, let me also say that what that doesn't mean is it definitely doesn't mean that the goal is to agree, or that the goal is to always see things the same way. That would be boring. But the goal is, how do we move forward in health without entering into these foolish circular arguments that never accomplish anything productive? Second question I think is worth asking is this: am I reacting to something without considering or clarifying intent? Am I reacting to something without considering or clarifying intent? Now, this is something we say often around here, we say often in this room, but that we tend to judge ourselves by our intentions. And we want others to judge us by our intentions as well. But we tend to judge other people by what they actually say or do. And rarely do we pause long enough to consider clarifying the other person's intent. Instead, when we hear something or the other person does something, we just often react and we assume ill intent on their part. But the irony is that we despise it when people do that to us. And we find ourselves pleading with people all the time, wait a second, that's not what I meant when I said that, or that's not what I meant when I did that. That's not my heart. Come on, you got to trust my heart in that. And we plead with people over and over again. But we often don't do that same thing for others or treat others the way that we want to be treated. So we have to be willing to ask the question, am I reacting to something that was said or done without considering or clarifying intent? Now, let me say that sometimes there are some whose intent is deceitful or malicious. That does happen. But the vast majority of time, that's not the case. Most of the time, most all people are operating based off intentions that they deep down believe are right, that they believe are good. And yet, often we tend to react without ever asking a question like, hey, can you help me understand why you did that? Can you help me understand your thought process? Can you clarify for me what you meant when you said that? It's one of the things I'm discovering more and more about relationships all the time is the different meaning and emphases that each of us place on certain words. For example, I talk to married couples about this all the time when I sit down with them, and it's one of the things that my wife Adrian and I discovered not too long after we were married, and it's how we used different words to try to convey the same meaning. and the problems that would become because we would assume what the other person meant when we heard it said that, and we would jump to conclusions all the time. So, for example, one of the things that revolved around was when we were angry, what words we would use. And so, kind of have different scales of anger. So we kind of have, you know, the 25% angry, you know, I'm 50% angry, I'm 75% angry, and then I'm 100% angry. And so the words that I would use, and kind of, it's a good exercise to kind of go through, what are the words that I would use, you know, at that kind of different level of anger for me? And so for me, like at the 25% mark, usually I would say, you know what, I'm frustrated. No, I'm just frustrated. I'm bothered by something. No big deal. That's really small for me. 50% as it kind of moves up, I'd probably use the word ticked, you know? I'm just ticked. That ticks me off, you know? 75% starts moving its way up to something more like, you know, I'm hacked off. So 75%. Now, at 100%, for me, and this is really rare, is I'd say I'm mad. Like, I'm not a person that really gets mad very often. You know, I'm pretty even-killed, pretty even-tempered. I don't kind of fly off the handle, you know, or any of those kinds of things very rarely. And so I'm just a pretty calm person. And so for me to say I'm mad, that means this thing has just put me over the edge. Now, interesting about my wife, Adrienne, is that she had different sets of words, you know? And so for her, when her 25%, when she was at 25%, she would use the word mad, you know? Now, that doesn't mean she starts at my 100% and she's just, woo, you know, kind of way off the handle. It's just that for her, this is the word she would use to describe the same thing. And so you get down here, you know, when it was mad for her, she would use the word upset. I'm upset. When she's at 100%, it's upset. For her, you know, 75%, you know, was, I think when we did it, she would say she was frustrated at 75%, and 50%, I don't remember, it was probably something we can't say in church anyway, so. I'm just kidding, sweetie. This is the service she's in, so I can say that, you know? But she had never said anything like that. But I'm just kidding. So, but these, you know, what we kept discovering was there would be certain moments where I would say, you know, I'm frustrated about something. And what she would hear in her mind is this. She'd hear that and she'd be like, whoa, wait a second. Like, I thought that was just a little kind of a deal and he must be really, really upset about this. I'm like, no, I'm just frustrated. Or, you know, in my world, you know what? She'd say, you know what? In my world, let's say, you know, I'd say I'm mad and I'm steaming about this. And she would just hear, oh, well, it'd just not be that big of a deal. And so, yeah, you can see where that creates problems. And what it does is you make assumptions based off of what you understand certain words to mean without ever taking the time to clarify that or what someone actually does mean. I mean, last year, they said that we passed 1 million words in the English language. And so we got 1 million words, and what you can't do is just listen to certain words and just go with your gut on what you think someone meant without taking the time to clarify that. And so when you see something or hear something that causes this desire to kind of go to battle in you, start to boil up, it's worth pausing for a few moments to consider and clarify someone's intent rather than make assumptions. Again, Proverbs chapter 20, verse 3 says, it's a mark of good character to avert quarrels, but fools love to pick fights. Third question I think is worth asking is this: am I trying to solve a problem that doesn't need to be solved? Am I trying to solve a problem that doesn't need to be solved? Now, that may sound odd to some of you because perhaps you're one of those that sees every problem as something that needs to be solved, but your willingness to wrestle with this one question will very likely save you from many foolish and stupid arguments. Because the reality is, every organization, every family, every system, every church has problems that shouldn't be solved and tensions that shouldn't be resolved. I learned this idea from Pastor Andy Stanley down in Georgia several years ago, and then later on it was fleshed out more in a book by a different business author called Managing Polarities. And so this same kind of idea, but it's this example of consider certain tensions. What about the tension between fulfilling all of your responsibilities at home and fulfilling all of your responsibilities at work? Now, I'm sure I'm the only one who lives with that tension, and you can't really relate to that. But imagine for some of you, you do understand what that pressure is. And there may be reoccurring discussions and debates that occur over that very specific issue, or maybe in your work environment. Maybe your company always seems to be juggling this debate between who should win out, the R&D department, the research and development department, or the sales department. And there's this constant tension of who gets priority about who wins out. Who's going to get the most money? Which side is going to win? We face the same types of tensions here at Crosspoint. I mean, any organization does. Tensions like one that we face is the tension between excellence and stewardship. Between excellence and careful stewardship. We want to create excellent, engaging environments, but we also want to be very careful stewards of every dollar that's entrusted to us. And so where we can find ourselves at times is coming up against and bumping up against these recurring tensions over and over again. And what we have are mature, smart people that can articulate both sides of the tension very well. And when you have that, what you need to learn is that sometimes what you have is not a problem that needs to be solved, and not a tension that needs to be resolved, but rather what you may have is a tension that just needs to get managed. Because understand, if you resolve any of the tensions like the ones I just mentioned, understand, if you pick one side or the other, what you do is you create new tensions. And often you create a much harsher climate than the one you're in now. For example, if you decide, you know what, I'm going to resolve to fulfill all of my responsibilities at home from here on out, and I'm going to neglect my responsibilities at work, what you'll likely find yourself is one without a job, you know, which in turn will create a whole new set of harsher tensions at home. And if you decide on the opposite way, you know what, I'm going to choose work and I'm going to neglect home, then that has extreme and harsh consequences as well. Or take the idea of excellence versus stewardship, the tension we have here and the tension that every organization faces. If we resolve the tension by saying, well, let's always opt for excellence, doesn't matter how much it costs, and we just choose to say, let's just neglect sound financial wisdom, then we, like any other organization, aren't going to be around very long. But the same is true on the other side. If we said, you know what, it doesn't matter if we have a building, doesn't matter if we have AC or electricity or chairs, doesn't matter if we have words on the screen or engaging environments for kids, doesn't matter if we have any kind of focused leadership that's able to help move our community forward, let's just be as cheap as we possibly can be in every single arena, then we wouldn't be nearly as effective as a community. No organization would. And so again, understand, when you find yourself coming back to these recurring debates and these same tensions over and over again, where you have very mature people who are able to articulate both sides very well and are passionate about both sides, what you may have is not a tension that needs to be resolved, but rather a tension that needs to be managed. Now, as I talk about that, there's lots of different things we could talk along that issue. But one thing, just to clarify, is what it doesn't mean is, it doesn't mean that you're supposed to keep everything balanced all the time. And how do you keep everything equal all the time? There are certain seasons when your company needs to spend more money on R&D than it does sales. But since they're tensions that you manage, you never just completely let go of one. But you do have at times to lean one way or another. There are certain seasons when you need to give more attention at home than you do at work. There are certain seasons in any organization when you need to make sure that you tighten the belt in very difficult economic times. But it's easier to do that when you understand that what you have are certain tensions that need to be managed rather than trying to figure out which side's going to win, trying to solve a problem. But when you don't understand that principle and the different areas of life that it plays out in, you find yourself at times coming back to these same foolish arguments over and over and over again. Because they aren't problems that need to be solved, but they're tensions that need to be managed. Paul says to Timothy, make sure that you avoid foolish and stupid arguments that only end up in quarrels. And that's wisdom that we've tried to embrace from the beginning here at Crosspoint. It's one of these kind of underlying values that help make our culture what it is. And it's not something that necessarily is always out in front all the time, but it's one of these underlying values that hopefully help make Crosspoint the kind of community and the kind of culture that you like being a part of. Because sometimes, you know, how that plays out is somebody comes up and asks me, this happened just a few weeks ago, someone came up and said, so, what's your stance on this? Or what's your position on this? And people want to know. People want you to kind of enter into a debate. A few weeks ago it was, so, tell me what your stance is on creation. Well, God created it. And, well, yeah. Okay, no, I, you know what I mean. About how old you think the earth is. Do you think it's, you know, just a few thousand years old, or do you think it's millions of years old? Do you think God created it in a literal 24-hour day period, or do you think God used evolution to create it over millions of years? What's, you know, what do you think? And I said, we don't have a position on that. We don't take a stance on that. And they were like, whoa, 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 like very frustrated. What do you mean you don't have a stance on that? You don't have a position on that? And it's like, well, we've got people in our leadership and all throughout our church that believe very differently on that issue. And we think that's a good tension. And we think we can continually, respectfully learn from each other. But Jesus never says you have to pick a side on that issue. Doesn't say that. It's not a, and so, because we don't have to pick, that's just not a debate that we enter into or that we divide over, or that we take a stance on. We can all talk very, you know, intellectually about that issue, and we've got some opinions on that issue, but we don't divide over that or draw lines on that. Another thing, sometimes people come up and they'll say, you know, and this is always church people, you know, it's always people that have come from a long background of church, people that didn't grow up in church, these aren't issues they want to fight about, but if they've grown up in church for a long time, it's always issues that they want to debate about, and so they'll come up and they'll say, so does Crosspoint believe in predestination or free will? And I'll say, yes, and people really get frustrated at times if they want to debate, if they want to fight, and I'm like, well, you know what, the Bible teaches both. It does, and so we're okay with holding that tension, and the Bible doesn't say you have to get a certain label or you have to pick a camp or a theological camp that you have to live in. And yet, what we find are way too many Christians, and you've seen this, debating and dividing over issues and debates that can't be solved. And what you have are people, from very mature people that can articulate both sides of the debate very, very well. But there are certain people that just want to keep fighting and bickering about it and drawing lines and dividing over it. Again, it's not that the discussion isn't good. Again, it's not that the conversation isn't important and you can discuss that. It's when it becomes argumentative. It's when it becomes divisive. It becomes when someone's trying to win and have their point be shown as right. Because even as I talk about certain things like creation or predestination and free will, there are some of you in here that something bubbles up in you and says, oh no, that argument is worth having. Because there's a right way. There's a right perspective. And you want to prove that you're right or that your side is right. But you need to understand the person on the other side of the debate is convicted just as strongly as you. And when you're trying to debate issues that can never be solved, what you're doing is entering into this foolish debate and divisive debate that we just choose not to enter into. But the rub is some people see that willingness to not enter into the debate, whether in a public thing or with a microphone up here, they'll see that as being weak. Or they see that as being intellectually inferior, that somehow we can't handle the discussion. We can't really dive into it because we're just not smart enough to. Or they say, you know, oh, you're just simply shying away from the tough issues. When in fact, understand, it is none of those things. But rather what it is it's practicing wisdom. It's practicing wisdom, the same wisdom that we see Paul pass on to Timothy. And it's the same wisdom we see in Jesus, who was persecuted, who was spit on, who was tortured, where people, you know, time after time wanted to goad him into certain debates and get him to pick a side on a black and white in their mind issue, pick a side of the argument. And often what Jesus chose instead was a third way to answer. He had a way of asking another question that caused people to see a seemingly black and white issue from a completely different perspective. And just as often, what he chose to do was simply stay silent when people tried to corner him or tried to force him into a debate. He just stayed quiet. And here we are, 2,000 years later, still admiring and talking about Jesus. So here's my hope. My hope is that we would all be the kind of people that would pause long enough to ask ourselves difficult but important questions, where we wouldn't find ourselves rushing into foolish arguments and controversies that only result in quarrels and serve as divisive and divide people, but rather we'd be the kind of people who would heed the wisdom of Paul that he passed down from a lifetime of experience, where we would strive to listen and learn in humility, where we would be much more concerned about what is right rather than trying to be perceived as right or trying to win, where we would take the time to try to clarify someone's intent, to try to consider someone's intent before we jump to conclusions, and that we would learn the art of managing tensions. And again, understanding it, not as weakness, but as wisdom. And one more way that we learn to practically live out the very core of walking with Jesus, where Jesus, when he sums it all up, says, you sum it all up in this. It's about loving God and loving people. And we would commit ourselves to figuring out whatever tools are necessary to apply that very simple but profound principle to our lives. So let's pray. Father, thank you for this community of people. And thank you for their willingness to continue to wrestle with your word, and that all of us, that we would figure out how to apply it. And so I pray for my brothers and sisters in here as they step into the holidays, and for some that find themselves already getting tense because of certain arguments or debates that feel like always want to come up. That, Father, that during the holidays and in every moment of our lives, conversations, whether we speak on Facebook or in blogs or in face-to-face, that we would be the kind of people marked by humility, that we would be the kind of people that reflect your heart, and that we wouldn't be provoked into arguments and debates that only go around and round in circles. But Father, that instead that we would learn your way, where we would place people in their hearts way above debates that never get resolved. And so, Father, we love you. We continue to want to trust you. Give us the courage to do that. And in the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen. Thanks, friends. We'll see you next week.